Welcome to Today on Broadway for Thursday, March 2nd, 2017. I'm Broadway World's Matt Tamanini.
And I am Broadway Star's James Marino.
James, thank you for covering for me last night. I went to see a new movie, the new Anna Kendrick, Mark and Jay Duplass movie called Table 19. I'll be writing a review for that on Broadway World that'll come out on Friday, but needless to say, it has Anna Kendrick in it, so I absolutely loved it, but it is a great movie. Not exactly what you think it is going in, but the Duplass brothers are some of the best writers of TV and film that I've seen in the last few years. So if you either like the Duplass brothers, they do Love on Netflix. They had a movie come out last year with Mark Duplass and Sarah Paulson called Blue Jay. If you like their stuff or you like Anna Kendrick, this is a really, really good movie. So check that out.
Loves us some Anna Kendrick, don't we now?
I know I do, that's for sure.
Hey, you know, I totally forgot to email you. A listener emailed me and asked about your Kudish interview. Did that run on Broadway World yet?
It did. It ran on Sunday before the before his first appearance on Billions. So I'll put a link in the show notes. There's actually, I'm going to have another one come out this weekend, because if you know Kudish, he is nothing if not verbose.
Verbose, yes.
Yeah, so we talked for about 45-ish minutes. And so I pulled all the stuff that was applicable to Billions. And he talks about why he's doing more TV and the changes in theater that has led him away from theater a little bit more in the last 5 years. But we also had a nice little 10-ish minute conversation about the new Sondheim David Ives musical that he has been working on the workshops and labs for, or whatever, called Bunnell, which we've talked about. He doesn't really give a whole lot of new details about it, but just kind of talks about the process, talks about a Nancy Opel song that is fantastic. So that'll come up this weekend. But I'll put the one that was specifically about the Showtime show Billions in the show notes in case anybody wants to check that out.
Cool. Did I tell you that I ran into Kudish at Broadway Con? Did I tell you how I ran into him?
No, but with this setup, I would imagine that you actually literally physically ran into him.
Well, we did actually physically run into him, but I was camped out in the press room of Broadway Con, which is a little tiny room to the side and quiet, and people were there, you know, using some internet and charging up their devices. And Kudish came in and was brought this girl who was 9-10 years old and her parents, and did a monologue workshop with her right there.
Wow.
And they had met, and she's like, "I'm a big fan of yours and things like this, and I want to become an actor." And he pulled her aside and spent like 45 minutes with her going over a monologue that she wanted to do and
wow,
giving her great guidance. He's such a great guy.
All right. Yeah, you and I have talked about our deep and unwavering, I don't know if affection is the right word, but appreciation
respect
for Kudish for a long time. Yeah, respect. He's just so good and so passionate, and I really enjoyed talking to him. But, you know, for 45 minutes, I felt like, you know, as normally if I talk to somebody for 45 minutes, I want them to go away and I don't want to ever see them again. But for him, I felt like I could have gone on for hours just listening to him talk about whatever the hell he wanted to talk about.
Remind me to tell you the story about when we tiled his kitchen. So, let's start off with the Sweeney Todd opens off Broadway.
Yeah, this is that weird Tooting Arts Club transfer immersive production of Sweeney Todd that's happening at the Barrow Street Theater, where they've taken the Barrow Street Theater and turned it into a replica of a live working London pie shop. It stars Jeremy Seacombe as Sweeney Todd, Siobhan McCarthy as Mrs. Levitt, Duncan Smith as Judge Turpin, and Joseph Taylor as Tobias. Those are all people who starred in the original London version that have transferred over and will only be with the production through April before they are replaced with some more New York-centric actors, including Carolee Carmello as Mrs. Levitt, Norm Lewis as Sweeney. The American actors joining the company are Matt Doyle as Anthony, Alex Finke as Joanna, Betsy Morgan as Pirelli and the Beggar Woman. I feel like that's kind of a spoiler alert there, but either way, Brad Oscar as the Beetle. And the reviews have come in, and James, I think you and I really liked this idea when it was first announced. The reviews seem to assume that people didn't love the idea, But it turns out that we were right not to pat ourselves on the back, because I think everybody loved it. But it works really, really well. Robert Kahn from NBC New York said, "Did you come here for a pie, sir? If so, smart move. The traditional meat or vegetarian pie dished out to audience members before each performance of the Tooting Arts Club Sweeney Todd alongside a gut-warming mound of mash is scrumptious. That's to be expected, since the delicacies are the creation of a former White House pastry chef. Equally satisfying is the production itself. An in-your-face take on Stephen Sondheim's dark tale about a bloodthirsty barber now at the Barrow Street Theater." Similarly, Time Out New York's David Cody wrote, "Sweeney Todd set in a working replica of a London pie shop with actors jumping on tables inches from audience members' faces sounds like a terrible idea." Know what else sounded like a terrible idea on paper? A Broadway musical about a vengeful barber who slits customers' throats and whose accomplice bakes the corpses into meat pies. But Sweeney Todd is Sondheim's grisly masterpiece, the most melodically complex and theatrically boldest of his works. Just as Sweeney defied expectations, this high concept staging is, to borrow Sweeney's encomium of Mrs. Lovett, a bloody wonder, eminently practical yet appropriate. Broadway radio friend Matt Winman of AM New York writes, "Tooting Arts Club's new production, which originated in London and is now playing off-Broadway in the West Village, is built around a working pie shop, not unlike the one operated by Mrs. Lovett, Sweeney's money-hungry partner in crime. Audience members can dine on meat pies before the show. The 8-member cast," I didn't realize it was that small, "combines holdovers from the London production, which we talked about. They are joined by just 3 musicians, so a pretty small production. The pie shop concept is cute at first, but Sweeney is a heavily plotted drama that involves many different locations. This production is awkwardly staged around just a service counter and communal tables, and few seats are not obstructed in some way. At its best, Sweeney can be terrifying, mesmerizing, and sweeping, but this production sacrifices the storytelling and score for the sake of the gimmick." So apparently not everybody loved the idea as much as some of the other ones did. So I think this is really interesting. If James, I don't think you're scheduled to go. I wonder if Peter and Michael are. But if you're going to see this, let us know what you think, because I have, as much as I abhor audience participation and stuff, I really love where theater is going with these more immersive concept things. I don't like the interactive stuff of it, but the fact that this is, a really unusual idea, I think it could be really cool. So let us know what you think of it, because since James, you're not going, we got to rely on some other people to let us know how this actually turned out for them.
Well, I didn't know it was eight cast members either. I mean, we can reflect back to the Forbidden Broadway Teeny Todd song from the small revival of Sweeney Todd that happened at, I think, at Circle in the Square or something many years ago.
Yeah, with Cerveris and Lapone and Lauren Molina and Donalyn Champlin all playing their own intro. John Doyle directed.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, oh no, I'm looking at this headline. Al Pacino, God Looked Away, gets horrendous LA Times review.
Yeah, technically it's not a review. And here's why. The Pasadena Playhouse is doing this new Playworks development series, and one of the shows they're working on is God Looked Away, in which Al Pacino plays a intoxicated and stoned Tennessee Williams late in his life. We've talked about this. Originally, there were thoughts that it might come directly to Broadway. It co-stars Jessica Light. But one of the things is they're charging more than $200 for prime seats, and yet they are not inviting critics. So Charles McNulty, our friend from the LA Times, he just went. And while he's not actually doing a full-on review, he is saying things like, "The privilege of seeing Pacino portray the aging American playwright in a Demerol haze while pawing shirtless male hustlers as reviewers crucify him for his latest flop doesn't come cheap." Danny Feldman, the Playhouse's producing artistic director, talks the usual talk about the faith and commitment, tenacity, and resolution behind the new play, but this is in part rhetorical cover for a business arrangement the nonprofit theater has made with a slew of outside investors. "Having now seen God Looked Away, I can confirm that the play is unfinished. Not only isn't it ready for critics, but I'm not sure it's up to the scrutiny of paying customers, at least not at these ludicrous prices." McNulty said that he paid $135 for a Saturday matinee ticket that put him in the back of the orchestra. It was the best seat available for that show. And he said if the LA Times wasn't paying for the ticket, he would be reading this quote, non-review on Yelp instead, because that's how bad he didn't like it. Said, no, I won't tell you what I think of Pacino's Bronxified Southern drawl or the way he seems to be wandering about in a fugue state. And please don't ask me to comment on how Robert Alan Ackerman's dithering direction compounds the slow motion tailspins of this 2-hour, 45-minute play. As for Judith Light, who receives star billing, my belief in truth and advertising impels me to tell you that her scenery chewing turn begins only after we've settled back into our seats after intermission, but I beg you not to interrogate me any further on the subject. So clearly Charles is trying to dance around the quote unquote review, since he was not officially invited as a critic. But he makes his thoughts known that this is, it's a disaster, James. He goes on to talk about how the original book that this is based on is not being done any favors, by this adaptation. And, if he makes the suggestion that what this needs instead of a production with people paying $200 is a closed door workshop, lots of more work. And if it ever does come back to light again, it needs to be significantly overhauled.
Wow. Critics looked away from God looked away.
Unfortunately, it looks like they actually looked at it, which might actually be the problem there.
Yeah. Don't read the comments and never look directly at the sun. All right. Show and casting news. What's going on with our good friend Patty Murren?
Well, there was this is one of those things that's been gestating for a long time. But yesterday, Broadway.com had an exclusive announcement, which was later confirmed by Broadway World and other outlets, that the next upcoming lab presentation of the Disney musical Frozen will again star Patty Murren, our friend and Broadway Radio colleague, as Princess Anna. But in the role of Queen Elsa instead of Betsy Wolfe, who did the first few productions, Hair, Les Mis, Wicked, Hairspray alum Casey Levy will be playing the Idina Menzel role in this stage adaptation. The reason that this is such a big deal is because the show's scheduled to open in Denver on August 17th for its pre-Broadway tryout. Then, after running through October 1st, is scheduled to transfer to the St. James Theater in spring of 2018. So the assumption is that with a spring workshop or spring lab, sorry, I don't want to get those two confused because they are very different. With a spring lab under their belts, that the assumption is that this is the cast, unless something goes disastrously wrong, that will go to Denver and then will eventually transfer to the Broadway. So no other casting has been, of course, Disney did not confirm or deny this report, but no other casting has been leaked. Obviously, we'd spoken recently about Okarite and Natawan, who had been part of the last lab. He obviously can't do the Denver run because he is now taking over for Josh Groban and Natasha Pierre in The Great Comet of 1812. So it'll be interesting to see who actually joins them in this lab, if we find out. Generally, there's a few social media posts, some Instagram pictures here and there that gives us some clues. And then eventually, I would assume after this lab, it shouldn't be too long before they announce the full cast for Denver. Because like I said, it starts on August 17th, so you'd assume they'd at least have a month to 6 weeks to 2 months of rehearsals in a show that is obviously going to be very technologically driven.
All right. BroadwayStarsNot.com set to escape to Margaritaville.
Very nicely done. We've been telling you about this new Jimmy Buffett musical, Escape to Margaritaville, that is going to be setting sail from the La Jolla Playhouse and then on a national tour before it heads off to Broadway, in theory at least. But yesterday, the La Jolla Playhouse announced the principal leads for Escape to Margaritaville, and they will include Paul Alexander Nolan as the lead role of Tully, and he'll be joined by Allison Luff as Rachel and Lisa Howard as Tammy. Additional information, including complete casting, will be announced shortly. Obviously, Lisa Howard, Tony nominee for, the show, I had it on the tip of my tongue. She was originally in Spelling Bee, and then she did It Should Have Been You. It Should Have Been You. She played the nurse in Sunday in the Park concert and then didn't come to Broadway with it. Paul Alexander Nolan, most recently of Bright Star, and then Allison Luff has also most recently been seen on Broadway as Fantine and Les Mis, actually taking over for Casey Levy. She was in Matilda and Scandalous and a whole bunch of other stuff. So, so it's a really good cast. I've said before, I spent 6 months as a waiter at the actual restaurant Margaritaville. So as much as I've heard all these songs a ton, I'm actually really excited about this show, and I'm hoping that it does really well. And after its tryouts in I think it's going to like New Orleans and Chicago and all these other places. I hope it does end up docking in Broadway.
That's really exciting, and it's quite a cast. They have at least the first three that they've announced there. Mm. So Muriel's Wedding officially set to premiere in Sydney this November. Our friends down under have gotten it first.
Yeah, crikey. Muriel's Wedding is based on a an Australian film from the late 1990s, I believe. Mm-hmm. We talked about this in last year at some point, and people were really excited about it. It was rumored that it was going to be coming. Well, it is now official that Muriel's Wedding, the musical, will make its world premiere in Sydney, November 7th through January 20th at the Rosalind Packer Theatre. Tickets will go on sale for everybody in Australia or anywhere around that wants to go on March 13th. The creative team includes Keir Nuttall and Kate Miller-Heidke, who are award-winning singer-songwriters, director Simon Phillips, the film's original writer, director P.J. Hogan, and eye-popping sets and costumes by Gabriella Tile-Sova. This is one when I originally talked about it. This is a movie that I hadn't seen, but I know people absolutely adore this film. So I think this is something that is going to get a lot of coverage. And if it does well, I think the anticipation is that it will make a transfer either to London or potentially New York as well.
That's exciting. I know that there's tons of fans. It's a great movie, and I'm excited to see this as well. In our miscellaneous roundup here...
Lots of miscellaneous.
I was going to send you this, and I forgot to do it, and here it shows up. You complete me. So Cranes New York reports that Mayor Dilma Blasio. Oh my goodness.
Dilma Blasio. That's my new improv character. He's actually a pickle who's the mayor of New York.
That's excellent. I love that. Mayor Bill de Blasio scraps the air rights change.
Yes. Okay. We talked about this before, but yesterday, apparently, actually, it happened on Monday. The Bill de Blasio administration abruptly pulled its proposal to take a bigger cut of air rights sales in the theater district on Monday after a rift with city council members who altered a key part of the proposed legislation. The move ended a months-long effort to compel theater owners to pony up more cash for a fund used to support smaller organizations in broadened interest in productions, and could threaten a similar policy that is central to the administration's Midtown East rezoning. Because many Broadway theaters are landmarked, as we've talked about before, the sites cannot be developed beyond what they are currently at. That is why in 1998, the city created a special district allowing them to sell those unused development rights to other properties in the area and then use the cash for maintenance and upkeep. In exchange for this leeway, which isn't something that's allowed in other parts of the city, theater owners had to contribute a portion of any sale to the theater sub-district fund. The de Blasio administration argued that theater owners had been paying too little for too long and introduced a proposal that would capture a 20% cut of any air rights sales and establish a minimum price per square foot of $346. Right now, the average is about $75. But on Monday, the Department of City Planning abruptly pulled that application just before a council subcommittee was scheduled to vote on it because of a disagreement with legislators. James, this seems like it's something that will be welcomed by the theater owners. You know, I don't know enough to say if this is a good thing long term for the theater community or not, but it's something that I know the theater owners were heavily against for a lot of different reasons. But I guess this is a good thing for them. I'm not sure if it's a good thing for the theater district as a whole, though.
There's so many moving parts here. I have no idea. I would have to see if we can get a theater owner on to Broadway Radio to talk a little bit about the business itself and maybe even encroach upon this a little bit. You know,
I'm all for it. Let's get Jordan on.
Yeah. You know, I've tried to get Jordan on a few times, but his schedule's so wacky.
What else does he have to do? Let's get Jordan Roth and Dil de Blasio, the pickle mayor Dil de Blasio on, and we can have a back and forth, you know?
Or Rorden Jorth. All right. Lincoln Center publishes open letter in support of the NEA.
Yeah, on Tuesday, the Lincoln Center, different organizations, all of them, because there's a ton of different things that are housed under Lincoln Center, the Chamber Music Society of Lincoln Center, the Film Society of Lincoln Center, Jazz at Lincoln Center, the Juilliard School, Lincoln Center Theater, the Metropolitan Opera, New York City Ballet, the New York Philharmonic, the New York Public Library for the Performing Arts, the School of American Ballet, and the Lincoln Center for the Performing Arts all joined together to co-sign an open letter that argued for the saving of the National Endowment for the Arts. This is something that, James, I guess I didn't realize, not really being on the inside of a lot of these things, but I didn't realize it was so rare for all of these Lincoln Center organizations to come out and speak with one voice. Apparently, this is one of the very few times that it's ever happened, but they argued about how important the National Endowment of the Arts is, not only for them, but for other theater and arts organizations around the country. We've been talking about this for a long time. This is a huge thing and a huge voice for them because they are such a central part of the art scene in New York and then around the country as well. Their reach is quite large. So we'll have the letter in the show notes at BroadwayRadio.com if you want to check it out. But it is cool that it is co-signed by the executive directors or presidents or artistic directors of all of those different Lincoln Center organizations. And it's nice to see that these organizations are not being shy about the importance of saving the NEA from whatever potential threat that might be looming when budgets are finalized in D.C. later this year.
That's really good to hear. Hopefully there's a nationwide effort outside of the arts organizations that the citizens of America will come in support of the NEA and say that this is such a vital, important thing to keep supporting for just literally pennies per person.
Yeah, so, it really is.
Comes very troubling news out of the West End that we're not allowed to barbecue in the theater anymore.
No barbecue. You are allowed to spit roast something, but not but not actually barbecue. No. Apparently, we've talked about this show before. Imelda Staunton is playing Martha in a West End revival of Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf at the Harold Pinter Theater. Apparently, the theater sent out a request, an email, to all ticket buyers, and it's actually from the Ambassador Theater Group, and it says, quote, "Out of consideration for the actors and fellow audience members, we ask that no food be consumed during the performance." The email went on to say, "You may purchase food at the theater bars or enjoy before the show or during interval." It's London, remember, interval. But they ask that you not bring them in. Now, obviously, they are not completely banning it. They are not, you know, they don't have ushers there like slapping your hands if you try to bring some popcorn in, but they are trying to get this out of there. We all know what kind of issues having food in the theater can bring, people being distracted, people making noise. ATG said the nature of this production is such that anyone eating or using their telephone during the performance could disturb other patrons. I don't know how that is anything different from any other production, why this one is specifically different. But man, James, I'm torn on this one because, like, I completely understand. I don't want people on their phones. I don't want people making noise in the theaters. But I also don't know that trying to make things less enjoyable is the best way to get more people to buy theater tickets.
Yeah. I wonder what was the impetus behind the ambassador group to make this announcement. Maybe there was some sort of really horrendous thing that happened there. I'm not sure.
Well, and especially because this is the only show they're doing it for. It's not like, you know, Ambassador Theater Group only has one theater in London. Imelda Staunton apparently said, told the Radio Times back in November, "I don't know why people can't engage in just one thing. I don't understand this obsession with having to eat or drink something at every moment of the day." So I don't know if maybe it was something that she pushed for. I don't know. It just seems weird. Kit Harington, who has done, and he's a Game of Thrones star, he's done some shows where he did Dr. Faustus in the West End last fall at some point. He said, "I'm afraid that if the theater is going to die of anything, it will be from exactly this type of stereotyping and prejudice aimed towards a new and younger generation of theatergoers. I've been a theatergoer since childhood, and I don't feel that our audiences were disrespectful in the slightest," talking about, you know, this type of thing. So I don't know. I mean, it seems like maybe it's a generational thing. Maybe it's just the way things evolve. But I'm like Kit. because Kit and I are boys, I'm afraid that, you know, kind of outlawing these things and saying you're not even allowed to bring phones in the theaters, not that anyone's saying that yet, that could really push people who are the future of the theater going crowd away from the theater and to go to movies where you can buy a big tub of popcorn. And that's really where movie theaters make their money.
Well, I did bring a can of tuna fish to cats to open it up, but that's a whole different thing.
That's not wrong. Yeah, that's a whole different thing there.
All right. So, Denise Goff and Matt Henry to announce Olivier Awards next week.
Yeah, Denise Goff and Matt Henry will announce the nominees for this year's Olivier Awards on Monday, 6 March at 12 p.m. That's Greenwich Mean Time, so that's 5 a.m. East Coast time. I'm sure we, at Broadway World, we always embed the announcements, but you can also get them at Facebook Live or Facebook.com/Olivier Awards. Denise Goff won the Olivier Award for Best Actress for a Performance in the National Theater's acclaimed production of People, Places, and Things. She will appear in the National Theater's upcoming production of Angels in America. That runs through April of this year. Then she's going to bring People, Places, and Things to St. Anne's Warehouse in New York later this year. Matt Henry received the award for Best Actor in a Musical for his portrayal of Lola in Kinky Boots. Always a big deal. The Olivier Awards are something that, even though many Broadway fans don't get a chance to go over there, they're still really cool because, as similar as they are to the Tonys, they're really different, both in the ceremony itself, but then also the fact that, like, specific awards – this always gets me, James – that specific awards are sponsored, like MasterCard, Musical of the Year, and all these things. So I don't know if that's something the Tonys will ever do, if the Wing will ever allow that.
Only a matter of time.
Just like getting ads on sporting team uniforms. But it's really interesting. I love watching these things, even though I, you know, don't know really half the shows because I've never, you know, seen them or, you know, barely even heard of them. But this is cool. I'll be watching, not live because I'm not getting up that early to watch the live stream, but I'll watch it afterwards.
The Penske Tony Award for Lighting Design. There it is.
The Bose sound design. Oh, never mind.
Oh, I see what you did there. All right, let's wrap it up with Lego considering a new Hamilton set.
Yeah, okay. I didn't know this was a thing, but apparently, I don't know if it's something that maybe people can send in or if it's a Lego thing originally, but at ideas.lego.com, apparently they have plans for a potential Lego set for Hamilton. How this works is they put up different renderings of the set. I'm looking at it now. It looks like the Hamilton set. You can see the Skylar sisters. You can see all the characters on there. You can see the turntable in the middle. It's really good. And what they do is they try to see how many supporters they can get. If you can get to 10,000 supporters, which seems to me like it would be pretty easy, it's then approved and then it can go on to, you know, be created and sent to stores. Currently, this has only been up for like 2 days. It's already got close to 1,600, which, to be honest with you, seems a little small to me. But you have to register and all this stuff. It's not like you can just click a button. You've got to register at Lego.com, all that stuff, and go through it. There's another one for the Shakespeare's Globe, which was put by somebody else. There's official comments from Lego saying, congratulations, you've reached this many. So this is pretty cool. I mean, this is not a – I don't know if I don't make Legos. I don't build Lego stuff, but this seems like something that I would like to have, and it seems really cool. I'm a dork for collecting, like, the Funko Pop – I'm not going to call them dolls, but action figures, just because I wouldn't say I collect dolls. But I like these kind of pop culture, you know, things. And if you're interested, we'll have the link in the show notes so you can go over and take a look at it. And if you are so moved, hit that support button and see if you can get it to 10,000 people and force Lego's hand to make you a room where it happened.
I can't believe that if Lin-Manuel Miranda just tweeted this once, it wouldn't hit 10,000 in a day.
Absolutely. And I saw it because because our friends over at the Hamilcast retweeted it, is I think how I saw it the other day. So I would imagine that. Now, what's interesting about it is in terms of how many days are left, it says there are 598 days left to voice your support. So there's obviously plenty of time for people to get that out there. So it looks cool. It was just actually launched. I guess it was actually launched yesterday, so that's where I saw it. So very cool. I'm looking forward to seeing what happens with this, and maybe I'll build Legos for the first time in a couple years if this ever actually happens.
Now, who is it that's holding a big long sword?
I don't know. I've never seen Hamilton, James. Don't rub it in. Why don't you, you know? I'm guessing King George is up there on the left, but that really looks like King Arthur from Spamalot.
It really does. It really does. All right. Why don't you get us out of here?
All right. Thanks for listening to Today on Broadway. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter at Broadway Radio. And you can find me on Twitter at BWWMatt and subscribe to Something Can Pop on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play.
And my name is James Marino from BroadwayRadio.com and BroadwayStars.com. Thanks for spending some of your Thursday with us, and come on back, and we'll wrap up the week with you tomorrow.